We're talking about heritage languages on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A first language or a native language is one that a person has been exposed to since birth. And the Census Bureau says about a fifth of the U.S. population speaks a language other than English at home. Sometimes that language never leaves home, but educators are working to change that. And one example is the Hmong Language and Culture Enrichment Program here in Madison. It helps Hmong school-age kids learn their native language and culture. Did you grow up speaking a language at home and then you fine-tuned those skills in school? What has your knowledge of this language allowed you to do? Do you use it in your job today? Are you a parent who speaks to your child only in a native language? Why is that? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Kathy Stafford is an associate professor in UW-Madison's Department of Spanish and Portuguese. She directs the Senkit Language Acquisition Doctoral Program. Kathy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, heritage languages, we've heard about them as using them in the home. Can you put some numbers on this? How many people speak heritage languages here in Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin, the percentage is slightly lower than what you mentioned in the introduction. According to the American Community Survey from a couple of years ago, about 9% of the population reported speaking a language other than English at home. And most of those are actually also saying that they speak English very well. So we're talking about bilingual individuals who are also speakers of a non-English language.
The Census Bureau says the number of people in the U.S. speaking a heritage language has steadily increased since the 70s. Do we know what accounts for that steady climb?
In Wisconsin, what I know about Spanish speakers in the state, the increase in the population is due to U.S.-born Hispanics, actually. So it's a combination of continuous immigration and, in the case of Wisconsin, U.S.-born Hispanics.
So what are some of the most common heritage languages that we do see here in Wisconsin?
The most commonly spoken heritage language is Spanish, and the second most, as you alluded to also in the introduction, is Hmong. There are also numerous speakers of German. And overall, the Department of Public Instruction says that there are more than 100 non-English languages that are spoken across the state. But those three, Spanish, Hmong, and German, count the most speakers.
What do we know about indigenous languages?
Indigenous languages, strictly speaking, are not heritage languages. Heritage languages are brought to a place by immigration. But what we know about the number of speakers, if that's what you mean, of indigenous languages, is that there are very, very few. Tribes that I've spoken with have said that they have a handful or fewer elders who are native speakers of those indigenous languages, and they're trying to increase the numbers of those who speak the language as a second language. So in terms of numbers, there are very few. So these are languages that are in grave danger of disappearing.
We are learning about heritage languages with Kathy Stafford. She directs the Senkit Language Acquisition Doctoral Program at UW-Madison. What resources do you wish you had growing up to master a heritage language? Are you taking courses right now to help fine-tune your skills in a language you spoke only at home or within a community? Why did you decide you wanted to build your skills in this language? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Kathy, if we were to make the case for people to develop their heritage language skills outside of the home, what kind of benefits do you see from speaking more than one language proficiently?
There's a whole host of benefits that range from obvious social and emotional benefits to cognitive benefits, economic benefits, not only for the individual, but for families, communities, and indeed the state. In terms of the cognitive benefits, which are what really interests me, there are studies that have concluded that being bilingual can increase your capacity for focusing your attention in the face of distraction, creativity, flexibility in thinking, enhanced problem-solving skills. So those are just to name a few of the cognitive benefits, and we could go on talking about social benefits.
Yeah, what are those?
Well, languages are all about building relationships. Relationships are built through and in languages. And the more languages you speak, the more people you can reach out to and share your experiences and understand and broaden worldviews. And so I can see only positive social benefits for being bilingual, multilingual.
What are you seeing on the career front in terms of job opportunities?
More and more opportunities, and in more and more sectors, you could say. I was recently given the opportunity to participate in a project where I spoke to business leaders from different sectors from across the state, and everybody had a story. Everybody had a story of either securing a deal or losing a deal because of language proficiencies and cultural competencies to be able to relate to potential and existing business partners in their own language is incredibly powerful in an economic sense. And you know, as I mentioned before, just building relationships.
Well, let's bring in a call now. David is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hey, how's it going, ladies?
Good, David. So what would you like to bring forth here about heritage languages?
Well, my grandparents came from Sicily, and although they were concerned with this kind of outmoded concept of assimilation, some of the language and the dialect, the Sicilian dialect, which wasn't Italian, it was a subset of Italian with a lot of Arabic influence, survived nonetheless. So they tried to get everyone to speak English because they were concerned with the accent and they wanted proficient English speakers within a generation. But we kept so many words, and it has come in so handy for us, especially when we decide, for instance, we don't want to be understood in public, where we see regular white people doing something and we want to curse them for their boorish mouth agape, red-faced ineptitude.
Well, David, let me ask you this. Have you seen this language passed down to a younger generation? What about the kids today?
No, it's dead. Italians in Italy, they say internet. They say television. See, these languages are dead. Language is a living, fluid thing. It either absorbs other languages or it atrophies and dies.
Well, David, thanks so much. And Kathy, what would you say there to David?
Well, as you said, David, languages are living things, and you could say that they're dead because they are different from what they were generations ago, but languages do nothing but change. And so, you could argue both ways that the languages are dead or that they have evolved as all languages do.
And what do you feel about this sort of assimilation that he brings up, that it's okay to know different languages and speak them in the U.S.?
Sure. Well, assimilation in terms of being an American or becoming an American is one issue, and then assimilating languages is another. And I can't recall exactly what David was saying in terms of his own family's assimilation, but every family has a story of adapting and adjusting to a new place that they've adopted as their home. And assimilation is a very natural part of that process.
Let's bring in Cordelia in Oshkosh. Hi, Cordelia.
I'm Cordelia. Yes. Hi, good morning. Thank you for hosting this talk. It's very, very interesting to me. I am a Swiss American. My mother came over here in the 1960s and raised us speaking English because she thought it would be confusing to us, even though she herself had grown up but multilingual coming from Switzerland. And also, I think there was also the stigma, you know, she was an immigrant. She wanted to fit in. She didn't want us to stand out. But we did have the opportunity as children to go visit our grandparents in Switzerland a few times. Of course, they all spoke English. but it sparked in me as a young person an interest in languages and a real desire to learn German. And I went on to learn German very well, study it. I even have a master's in German and then master's in second language acquisition as well. And I became, you know, adamant that when I had kids, I was going to raise them bilingually. So it kind of skipped a generation. So my kids, you know, by the time they get to college, you know, their German is going to be good enough that they can, you know, skip out of all of those intro classes, you know, if they want to. So anyway, the reason I did it was because, you know, number one, I knew how hard it was to learn it as an adult or a young adult. And also I knew from my studies that it was good for their brains. And the neat thing is I have experienced only positive feedback in my community to what I'm doing. I mean, I know when I was a kid, mom was kind of, what language did your mom speak? Swedish? What is that? Why would, you know? And now it's kind of like, wow, cool. You're raising your kids bilingually. I wish, you know, our kids could, you know, do this. And there's this really encouraging, welcoming feeling about it. And it's interesting. And I'm seeing that when we have a lot of refugees coming to the Fox Valley, and I've worked a lot with World Relief. And I've seen this, like, this tendency of these generations that are coming to, you know, of course, want to assimilate. Their kids don't want to stand out. They try to, you know, learn English. But I also work at the university, and I work with a lot of Hmong students who are now second, third generation. And there's a real strong desire for them to, like, learn the language and speak the language to their children. And so that's interesting to me because, you know, there is that when you come, there's that stigma that you're from a different country, you need to fit in. But then the next generation says, hey, let's try to revive that. Let's be proud of that.
Well, Cordelia, thank you so much for bringing this. We are learning about heritage languages and our country's current language capacity in our education system. Kathy Stafford is an associate professor in UW-Madison's Department of Spanish and Portuguese. Do you teach at a school with a dual language program? What do you want people to know about it? 800-642-1234. Stay with us. Maybe we'll hear your story on a heritage language on the Ideas Network. We're talking about heritage languages, those native languages often that don't get developed outside the home. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the Census Bureau, more than 60 million Americans speak a language other than English at home, and that number has been steadily growing since the 70s. But very few people develop proficiency in a language other than English in school. So what does that mean for the state of language here in the U.S.? Your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Are you a parent who decided not to speak your native language with your child at home, instead focusing on English mastery? How do you feel about that decision? Was it a conscious one? Call in. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Kathy Stafford stays with us. She directs the Second Language Acquisition Doctoral Program at UW-Madison. Kathy, we were talking there with Cordelia. She was telling us about raising her kids, speaking German. Are we seeing people now who regret not being able to be totally proficient in their heritage language and then reversing course for their own kids, really honing in on it?
The majority of students that I've spoken to in my work at the university, undergraduate students, they almost all have some feeling of regret if it was not a language that was supported in the home and certainly in the schools. And so that feeling of regret that I think both David and Cordelia were alluding to is something that is very common. And so it's in the case of Cordelia's family where the language acquisition skipped a generation, we find families that are taking it back up again and either studying it formally in schools or deciding as a family that they're going to either set aside some time during the day or have this sort of language island in the home. And whether or not that's increasing recently, I could not say. I don't know.
Well, when we look at the school setting, how do dual language programs work?
There are a couple of different models. There is the one-way dual language and two-way dual language immersion. And in the one-way, the program has students who are all either home language speakers of a non-English language or all native English speakers. And in two-way dual language immersion, we have a 50-50, or that's the goal anyway, to have half of the students speaking the non-English language as the home language and the other half speaking English in the home. And from the earlier grades, it tends to be more of the partner language, the non-English language that is used as the language of instruction. And then as the students go through the years, if it's a multi-year program, then it gets up to a 50% of the day where they're using English and 50% of the day where they're using the partner language.
What do we see with outcomes there? And are dual language immersion programs spreading in our country?
They do seem to be spreading, yes. In Wisconsin, the spread has been slow, but there are some programs in some urban areas and districts, mostly in Spanish, but there are a handful that are in languages other than Spanish, as the partner language, I mean. And across the country, we could point to some very successful outcomes. Particularly one case is the state of Utah, where they have developed programs in about 140 schools where there are dual language immersion classes from kindergarten through high school. Here in Wisconsin, so far, it's through elementary primarily, starting in kindergarten and then going through grade 5 or 6. There are efforts to add years so that the students have that access to bilingual development through their middle and high school years.
You recently co-directed the Wisconsin Language Roadmap Initiative, which looks to boost the state's economic competitiveness by promoting languages. What did you see through that roadmap? What did you learn through it?
So many things. As I mentioned earlier, participation in that project afforded me the opportunity to be speaking with business leaders who all said that there is demand for multilingual employees at all levels in a number of different sectors. And we also learned by talking with educators across the state that our capacities, there's a lot of hunger to learn different languages other than English, in addition to English, I should say. And capacity really varies in terms of the languages that can be offered. There's a dire teacher shortage for English, for non-English languages across the country. And so there is demand, there is capacity, but that capacity can certainly be improved by promoting people going into the teaching profession.
There are not a lot of opportunities for kids to learn Hmong in school or even in programs, but are there efforts to change that?
Hmong specifically, I'm not very knowledgeable about. What I do know about languages that do not have classes or formal offerings in schools, a lot of communities have grassroots efforts to offer culture classes, to offer language classes on weekends, summer programs. And so a lot of the efforts are grassroots and community-centered.
At UW-Eau Claire, there was this effort to preserve the Walloon language, which is a dying language found in eastern Wisconsin spoken by Belgian immigrants. Why do efforts like these matter when it comes to promoting linguistic diversity here in the state?
Well, everything is tied to language, and this is speaking as a linguist, so I fully admit my biases.
It all comes back to you, right, Kathy? It's all about you.
But culture is wrapped up in language. The entire history of a nation, of a place, is wrapped up in language, and so to lose that is devastating. And not only do we lose linguistic diversity, but we lose cultural diversity as well, and that is nothing but tragic as far as I'm concerned.
Let's go to Karen in Freedom now. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a chance to go to Greece and meet some distant relatives in the spring, so I've been trying to learn Greek. I found some apps and some online resources that teach you words and phrases, and I've ordered a book online for grammar, because I want to become conversational. Do you know of any other resources that I can tap into?
Great question, Karen. Thank you.
Well, Karen, it sounds like you've tapped into the resources that are most available. A lot of people have the impression that you have to learn a language and then speak it. Another wonderful resource is learning through speaking. So your experience when you go to Greece will probably be the best language learning resource out there.
It's also directed towards some Greek churches that maybe the elders still speak it.
Oh, that's a neat idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Finding communities within your own community, some pockets of where you might find native speakers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Karen, thanks so much for the call. Have a wonderful trip. Kathy, what resources are available to people interested in a second language or even in helping kids master a second language?
Well, the resources that Karen mentioned, and also there are... as I alluded to before, there are community efforts where speakers of the language have things as simple and community-based as having a coffee hour every week. They get together. I was lucky enough to go up to Ulu, Wisconsin a couple of years ago, and there are Heritage Finnish speakers up there, and they took it upon themselves to self-organize, and they come together and they have coffee and they practice speaking their Finnish. And so finding those pockets that you were alluding to, I think that's about the best thing that you can hope for. Create your own sort of immersion experience, and learn through speaking.
Kathy, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Kathy Stafford is an associate professor at UW-Madison's Department of Spanish and Portuguese and director of the Second Language Acquisition Doctoral Program at the university. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.